I'd like to get a sense of your background. You call yourself a student of economics and evolution.
I have had a very varied career. The last real job I had was loading chairlifts at a ski area in 1980. I was a ski bum.
To me, that suggests you've been hugely successful.
I have been.
Because you've been able to live your life the way you want to live it.
Right. Well, I was lucky. I was born to a prosperous family. My dad was a classic 1960s St. Louis do-gooder Jewish lawyer. National board of the ACLU, health in hospitals, aid the victims of crime. He was that kind of guy, and that's been imbued in me. But I was also quite prosperous. I was lucky. I was able to start my own businesses, and I did quite well. I'm not wildly rich, but I'm very comfortable. And because of them, I've built and sold quite a few, and I'm an equity investor in various things now. So I've been I was lucky. I got I started on third base. But in the process, I've built a lot of businesses. I've really come at this whole thing very much from that perspective. But I'm also just naturally a sort of intellectual guy, and I get super interested in things. I got super interested in economics, and about 15 years ago, I started studying it hard and started writing a blog, which is how I figure out what I think or try and work through problems. So I'm totally an autodidact, a self-trained student of economics. That results in some spotlight knowledge that an autodidact ends up with. I don't have some of the broader stuff that you would get if you went to graduate school, for instance. Right. But so I'm a self-trained student of economics, but I've studied hard and read thousands and thousands of things, you know.
And the gap between rich and poor in the United States at this time is the greatest gap in the history of time, isn't it?
I think it is. You know, it's hard to say, but if you look at Thomas Piketty's work, we're certainly at or above where we were in the late 19th century and early 20th century. This raises a point about the article I wrote, is that wealth has always been an extremely difficult thing to measure, because basically rich people don't want to tell you for very obvious reasons.
They don't want to tell you how much they have or where they've hidden it.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I mean, I think Piketty's colleague, Gabriel Zucman, has said there's at least $20 trillion in household wealth hiding in the world. Just for a benchmark, U.S. household wealth is about $100 trillion.
And how much is hidden?
About $20 trillion.
$20 trillion. Some
That's 100 plus. Now the $20 trillion is from worldwide.
Right.
Yeah.
And those are in the mattresses somewhere around the world, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They're in the labyrinths.
Right. So, and the gap between rich and everyone else in this country.
Yeah, the top 0.01% in the U.S. Today, this is 2014, I think, had about average $420 million in 2014 dollars. In the 70s and 80s, that was more like $30 million. So they have 12 times as much as they did then, and they already had a huge amount. Anybody below the top 10%, it's almost invisible how much wealth they have individually compared to that.
And you say these people could spend $20 million every year and they'd still just keep getting richer, even if they did absolutely nothing except choose some index funds.
And shop for a yacht for their 8-year-old. There are two kinds. We pay people for two things in this world. We pay them for doing things, and we pay them for owning things. And increasingly, it's been the latter. Much of that ownership income, and people like to call it investment income, but, you know, If you have $420 million, you put in a handful of index funds and never touch it, and you'll make, you easily can spend $20 million a year and still get richer.
Index funds, explain that term.
Index funds are like, you say, okay, invest in all the S&P 500 stocks, or invest in all the emerging market stocks, or, and they're just a fund you put some money into, they maintain a portfolio of whatever type of stocks. And modern portfolio theory says that's how you should invest. You just buy a few index funds and ignore them. And Warren Buffett proved that with a bet recently. He said, I'll bet you, some hedge fund guy, I'll bet you that if you put money in an S&P fund for 10 years compared to 10 hedge fund funds of hedge funds, you will come out ahead with the S&P 500 index fund, which is, you know, a tiny little management cost compared to the hedge funds, which charge a huge amount. And the S&P 500 just won hands down. That's what rich people certainly can do with their money, is just sit on it.
And just to get a sense of that, the market right now under the current president is doing fantastically.
So. Well, it's been doing fantastically since March of 2009, which was the bottom.
Right.
And so, you know, that's 8 years it's been doing fantastically. And that, I want to suggest, has a lot to do with the whole game being rigged for owners to do well.
Right. And the people who the people who don't have that kind of wealth and aspire to it, who is the one who said there are no poor people in America, just temporarily embarrassed millionaires? I think it was Steinbeck who said that. I'm not sure. But they believe that the rich earned this. This is a typical response. And you allude to this in the article. First of all, where does this notion come from? That the fact that they've rigged the system to benefit them, they're getting enormously wealthy beyond what anyone could ever need in lifetimes and lifetimes. And some people who go without that, who maybe go without basic things like healthcare, believe, no, they deserve that.
Yeah, I think the most interesting statistic on that is that in the U.S., 50 to 70% of wealth, that's $100 trillion in wealth, 50 to 70% of that wealth is inherited. And we just haven't even known that number until the last few years. Wealth, again, is extremely difficult to measure, and Piketty and Company, Emmanuel Saez, Gabriel Zucman, have been doing the world-changing work to actually analyze that. And also some of the accountants at the national accounts agencies, we didn't even have a measure, a complete and coherent measure of U.S. wealth in the national accounts until 2006. We didn't have quarterly numbers until 2012. We had some early efforts to measure that by the national accountants in the 80s, improving in the 90s. But when Mr. Kuznets in 1930 first created the National Income and Product Accounts, it was just designed to measure the flows of money in production and income. There was no way they could hope to measure wealth. They just didn't have the wherewithal to do it. So I think that this focus on wealth has not occurred before because we simply didn't have the information. But I think I diverge from the question you just asked me.
Well yes. I mean, poor people who keep voting against their best interests have this sense that these people are rich because they deserve it on some level. You're saying, no, they just were lucky and they got, I mean, like
well,
you.
I mean, certainly. I mean, I worked hard. When I was in my heyday, mm-hmm. I was working 60, 80, 100-hour weeks. But let me make this perfectly clear. I was loving it. Mm-hmm. It was fun. Mm-hmm. It's not like I was some diligent Calvinist with my nose to the grindstone. I was doing cool stuff, and I loved it. Mm-hmm. Yes, many people do make fortunes. But again, 50 to 70% of wealth is inherited. And I just saw a number today. The average household in the top 1% has inherited more than $400,000 in their lives. Right. So, you know what? My most successful business, I started shortly after my father died. He died somewhat young, and I got a small six-figure inheritance, you know, nothing like a retirement or anything, but I was just about to have kids, I was married, it was a buffer. I knew that if this business I was going to try failed, I'd have a place to stand. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see every American, everybody in the world, have that kind of solid platform, springboard, a place to stand, a comfortable life, secure, where they can take some chances, where all of us can be that kind of risk-taking entrepreneur. Because it's one thing to risk some money if you've got a million or millions of dollars. It's quite another thing to risk your family crashing and burning.
And living under a bridge somewhere.
It can happen.
With no health care, because there's no health care in this country.
There but for the grace of God go I.
Right.